Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2023 Youth Education Conference held in Salt Lake City, Utah.
I'm so excited you're all here. Isn't there like a swing dancing class going on right now? I feel honored that you are here instead of there. I want to give you a few facts to get you started, because sometimes I need to create a vested interest in learning about this stuff. By the way, by a show of hands, how many of you are 17 or older? Okay. Did you know that you can vote now even if you're 17, as long as you're 18 by November? Because November is when we vote for president. And if you're going to be voting for president, you want to have a say in who's going to appear on that ballot, which we call primaries. And if you're 17 now, you can vote in June at the primaries, as long as you'll be 18 in November. So anyways, just an interesting tidbit. That's why we should be training you, right? I talked about we train drivers. You have tons of written tests. You have online or on-road experience, but I don't know why we don't train our drivers or our voters before we say, go out and vote. It's your civic responsibility. That's the goal here, is to train you about how to do this. The 16th Amendment to the United States Constitution allows for the federal government to take enormous amounts of money from states in order to force them to capitulate to their demands. In 1950, 5% of jobs required paid permission of the government. Today, 25% of jobs require paid permission of the government. James Madison once wrote, "The misuse of power is the very essence of tyranny." In 1966, Marion G. Romney said, "The United States government is a welfare state." President McKay wrote, "A welfare state is when people look to and worship government more than their God." Mike Lee said, "Think of government like a hired thug. You want them to have muscle power and firearms, perhaps, but do you really want them teaching and educating your children, authorizing you to have open heart surgery, telling you how to manage your finances, and telling you that 3 servings of leafy greens is what's healthy?" But today, Americans tend to use government as a weapon, and we do expect them to raise and educate our children, manage our finances, tell us if we're worthy for open heart surgery, and tell us that 3 leafy servings is what's needed for a healthy lifestyle. I would like for us to get rid of that way of thinking and learn what really is. Apathy and ignorance are the biggest threats to the United States Constitution. Do you know what apathy and ignorance are? Apathy is like, I don't care. Ignorance is, I don't care. Apathy is, I know and I don't care. All right, so we don't want to use it as a weapon. Can I see by the show of hands, how many of you could tell me all 27 rights listed in the Bill of Rights? Yeah. Awesome. Raise your hand if you can tell me how many articles are in the Constitution. Sweet, a little bit more. Very good. Tell me, by a show of hands, how many of you know which article or section or part of the Constitution talks about the President of the United States? We're going to fix that. Take one, pass it back. And kudos to you who raised your hand over and over. That is impressive. You'll need a pen. Now, I don't have a lot of time. This is not a Constitution class. But I do think that if you're going to vote, you should understand the basics of the Constitution. Okay, so I have an alien name that I like to use to memorize the articles in the Constitution. There are 7 articles in the Constitution. Think of them like chapters of a book, okay? And the 7 letters of my alien name, I'm just going to say it for you, and then you're going to have to repeat it. The name is Legsasser. Can you say that? Legsasser, spelled L-E-J-S-A-S-R. Legsasser. Because the first article of the Constitution talks about the legislative branch. That's where they make law. Think law or legislative. The second is E for executive. That's the president. So where do you find information about the president? in Article 2 of the Constitution. E. And then the next one is J for judges. That's where they set up the Supreme Court and all lower courts. Lege. S is next. S stands for states. It's how a state becomes a member of the Union. We've done that several times since 1776, right? We started at 13. We have 50. Article 4 tells them how to do it. It also tells what rights the states have to give up in order to become a member of the United States of America. Like, for example, Utah can no longer make alliances and treaties with foreign countries. That's the federal government's job, right? Okay, then A. Okay, so the fifth letter is A for amend. It talks about how to amend the Constitution. It is one sentence, a very, very long sentence. But it is one sentence and tells us exactly how we can amend the Constitution. Who knows how many times we have amended the Constitution since it was written? 27 times. The first 10 amendments are collectively called the Bill of Rights. So we have 27 amendments, but the first 10 are the Bill of Rights, and after that it's tweaking the Constitution just a bit, right? Like women can vote, or blacks can vote, or you can be 18 to vote instead of 21 or whatever it was. All right, so the second S, or Article 6, is the Supremacy Clause. It talks about the Constitution being the supreme law of the land, so long as it was written in pursuance of the Constitution. It does not mean that every law Congress makes is the supreme law of the land, or we would have an oligarchy, right? It says the Constitution and all the laws written are the supreme law of the land, as long as it's made in pursuance thereof. Meaning, I'm going to give you a number. There are 26 powers delegated to the federal government in the United States Constitution. If they write a law that is under one of those 26 powers, then it's the supreme law of the land. But if it has nothing to do with the powers we delegated to them, then it's not the supreme law of the land. Okay? And the last one, R, stands for ratification. We don't use that anymore because we have more than 13 states, which means we need more than 9 to ratify, but that's all included in Article 5. We want to change the Constitution. So, what's the alien name? Lege Sasser. Turn to, I think it's on page 8, Article 2, Section 2. Oh, no, that's the other one I'm going to tell you. Article 2, Section 2 is on page 12. If you're going to vote for president, you should know what his powers are. And if you see them talking in some debates and saying, I'm going to do this, then you think, hey, the Constitution doesn't even give you that authority. Then you know, maybe that's not the guy that should run the country if they don't even know what's in the Constitution. Okay? So let's read this real quick. And I'm going to go quicker with you than I did with the adults because you're spry and you're fast and I have much more I need to talk about with you. So let's number the powers of the president. In fact, right next to Section 2 on the borders, I wrote powers of the president because all of his powers are right here in these three paragraphs. Okay, and all I did was I numbered them. So put a number 1 right above the word the president shall. Right above the word shall, just put a 1. He shall be the commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy. Now, it goes on for 4 more lines saying, you know, only if we declare war, and Congress can declare war. So he's not always commander-in-chief, just when Congress declares war. Does anybody know when's the last time Congress declared war? World War II. Every conflict or war or money that has been sent out of the country since then has been unconstitutional. Yes. All right, number 2. Go 6 lines down. 7 lines down where it says, the power to grant reprieves and pardons. Just put a number 2 above the word power. He has the power to grant reprieves and pardons. It's like a get-out-of-jail-free card. At the end of the presidential term, you'll see the presidents get up and say, I've reviewed the applications, and these 3 people can get out of jail free. Basically, that's what that is. I mean, if I had an hour to talk to you about that, I would, but basically, that's what it is. Okay, second paragraph, second line, where he says he can make treaties. The president can make treaties. That's power number 3. Now he can't, just because he goes and makes a treaty with the foreign country does not mean that that is now the supreme law of the land, because if that were the case, we would have a king. He has to bring it back and hand it to Congress and get Congress's permission for it to be. They have to approve it. So that's why you see with the approval of 2/3 of the senators, right? All states have to, or 2/3 of states have to agree to it. Power number 4 is 2 lines down. Shall appoint ambassadors. Shall appoint, put a number 4 above that, ambassadors, public ministers, consuls, judges, Supreme Court justices, he can appoint them. This is also checked Of course, Congress can say, no, we don't like that guy. Pick someone else. Because if he could appoint anybody he wanted, we would have like a king, right? So Congress checks that power as well. Okay, go all the way down to the third paragraph. The president shall have the power, this is power number five, to fill up all the vacancies that may happen. So if one of our U.S. senators quit or died, then Utah would be without a voice. And we don't want that because they pass like 100 laws a day. So we don't want Utah to be without a voice. So the president has the authority, the power, to appoint someone there real quick so Utah has a voice. While Utah has an emergency election, so that power is also checked, right? We don't want the president appointing whoever he wants for the state of Utah or she. So we have an emergency election, and then we replace that appointee, so that's and also a check power. The final power is not here, so just at the very end of paragraph 3, put a 6 and write veto bills. The president can veto bills. That's also checked by Congress, because just because the president vetoes it doesn't mean we can't pass the law. It can go right back to Congress, and they can pass it. Right? This is like a whole 6-hour class. I'm not going to go into that. But now you have the 6 powers of the president. And if you ever see them debating and they talk about things they're going to do, you now know if they have the authority, the constitutional authority to do that or not. Right? Okay, turn to page 8. This is Article 1, Section 8. Find Article 1, Section 8. And right above Section 8, write powers of Congress. Because in this section are all the powers of Congress. This is what they can do. And we're not going to go through them. You can go through them on your own. But these are the powers of Congress, the 20 powers that Congress can do. And if you see them doing anything that's not in this section, they're operating outside their authority. For example, I don't see the word education or schools anywhere in that section. Government, federal government should not even have an opinion about education here in Utah. And there are states who, we call it nullification, where they nullify and tell the federal government, no, you're not going to mandate or tell us what we're going to do in our schools. There are states doing that because it's within their power. There are states saying, no, that Obamacare thing, we're not going to do that in our state. It doesn't say healthcare in here at all. And there are states nullifying it. My favorite, Governor Brownback in, I think it's Kentucky, he said, in our state, we're not going to have any gun regulations. And the federal government went back and said, oh, yeah, well, we're going to send troops to your border because you have to. We're the federal government. And he wrote back and said, if you send federal agents to my border, I will arrest them at the border. So states are telling the federal government no because they have the constitutional authority to tell them no. It's really cool. No, it's knowledge is power, right? When you know what your rights are, then you have ground to stand on. That's a really quick, my 8-hour class lesson right there in 10 minutes. Because you can't go vote on someone and expect to find the best guy for the job if you don't know what he's supposed to be representing, right? All right. You came here to learn how to vote. Let's talk about that. Oh, yes, we talked about that, right? Yes, we talked about that. All right. Oh, yes, you got to know your Bill of Rights. Now, there was like 2 or 3 of you that knew your 27 rights, yes? If you give me 10 minutes, I'll teach you all the rights in the Bill of Rights. And I'll teach you little hand motions to help you remember them, okay? Hold up one finger to remind us what is in the First Amendment. And follow my motions. Push down on your leg. Okay, I'm going to go way faster than you're prepared for, so memorize it real fast. This stands for, in the First Amendment, we have the freedom of religion, we have the freedom of speech, we have the freedom of press. It's a stretch. Freedom to peaceably assemble, and the freedom to redress your grievances or complain to the government without fear of being put in prison. Right? I can write my governor, my mayor, my senator, and tell them, I don't like what you're doing. You should do this instead. I'm your constituent. That means, like, I'm under him, right? He's in my area. And he can't do anything to me for that. Okay, so freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom to peaceably assemble. We can't throw bricks. That's not a right. And to address your grievances. Second, everyone knows, right? 2A, Second Amendment. But I never want you to say it without this. The Second Amendment says, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, shall is a command. Thou shalt not, right? Okay. Shall not be infringed means they cannot have an opinion or a say about where, when, how, or what you carry. We're a little bit off track, aren't we? Okay. Second. Three. Third Amendment talks about three's a crowd. We can't be forced to quarter soldiers in our homes simply because we have the space. They can't force us to do that. Fourth Amendment. Hold up four fingers. Close it and bring it in. This means that my personal papers and effects are mine and they're private, and the government cannot search or seize them without my permission or a warrant from a judge. Okay? Now, they carried around personal papers and effects back then. What do you carry today that are your personal papers and effects? Yes. Yes, your phone. Does anybody have a smartwatch? Gab watch? Okay, here we go. Your tablet, your laptop, that's your personal papers and effects, and they can't search or seize it without your permission or a warrant from a judge. That's the Fourth Amendment, okay? Fifth Amendment has a lot of things, just like number one, so help watch me do this and do it with me. Wave it real nice and big. Two hands. And then this. I'm trying to pull it apart, but I can't. Okay? That stands for, we're using five fingers because it's the Fifth Amendment. Says we have a right to a grand jury. Big waving hand, right? That's different than a trial jury of 12. A grand jury is 16 to 24 people of your peers that can decide if charges can even be brought against you. Okay? And then this is, I plead the fifth, right? Have you ever heard that? You don't have to testify against yourself in court. They say I plead the fifth because it is the Fifth Amendment. Okay? No double jeopardy. Two hands for double jeopardy, meaning they can't bring the same charges against you twice. I have the right, oh, no, this is pay up. Pay up. If the government wants or needs to take your property, they have to pay fair market value. Whatever anybody else has to pay in order to take that from you, the government has to pay the same amount. They can't say, oh, there's only $20,000 in my budget. No, they have to pay the going rate. And this is, the government cannot take your life, your liberty, or your property without due process. If I want to take her $100 bill, I have to go through a process. I have to go through court. I have to bring in witnesses. Government has to do the same thing in order to take her $100. Okay? That's five. Six, point to your wristwatch. We are guaranteed a speedy and public trial. Seven, anything over $20, you're guaranteed a trial by jury. Seven, anything over $20, you're guaranteed a trial by jury of your peers. Eight, you have to hold eight fingers like me, because King George would cut off thumbs when he didn't like what they did. So they said, no cruel or unusual punishment. No excessive bills and fines. They can't charge me $2 million and 8 years in prison for spilling a candy bar. Right? That's cruel and unusual. Excessive bills and fines. Nine talks about rights. We just named 27 rights, but there are more rights you have that God gave you that were not listed in the Bill of Rights. Please don't forget that. This is not an all-inclusive list of all the rights God gave you. Right? You have the right to marry and walk your dog, have children. You can do those things. You have lots of rights just because you're a child of God. Ten. So 9 is about rights, 10 is about power. I think of like Atlas with big muscles. See my big muscles? Say yes. And he's holding the world on his shoulders because he's so strong. Powerful, right? So 10 is about powers. It says all the powers not listed in the Constitution, 26 to be exact, all the powers not listed in the Constitution belong to the states and to the people. So there's like a billion kazillion, right? Powers that belong to the people in the states. All right, now you're prepared to go vote. Now you know what every person running for office should know. And you could quiz them on that. Please, quiz them on that. My favorite thing is to talk to them in person. Because this is me, and I'm a little deviant. I know if I send them an email, they're going to go research and come back with the best internet answer ever. So I like to approach them at town halls. So what are you going to do about the Fourth Amendment here in Washington City? And they're like, remind me of the Fourth Amendment? I got your number. I totally know. Okay. When they write their web pages and their flyers, these candidates that are running for office, there are words that some of them might use that at the very least should make your haunches go up and make you ask questions. These words are not bad. My friends and I like to say they stole our words. Because I want to use them, but now they're demonized, right? These words are not bad, but if a candidate used them, you need to at least ask questions about what they mean by that, right? Diversity, equity, and inclusion, huge big deal in schools these days and in the workplace. I watched Utah laws, and there are laws being passed that you cannot renew your license to be a nail technician unless you take a diversity, equity, and inclusion class. You have to watch for these laws. You need to see if that candidate supports that law, right? Actually, there's not just nail technicians, but veterinarians are required to take that. Why would a veterinarian who doesn't even talk to people need to take a diversity, equity, and inclusion class? Privilege, tolerance, safe. They're not bad words, but you at least need to ask them, hey, what do you mean by privilege? Okay? I know that you guys, this is my favorite crowd to speak to because I don't have to talk basics with you. But I was at a United Nations conference in 2019 when they came to Salt Lake City. They always go to New York, but this one year they came to Salt Lake City. And I'm an educator because I have taught school for 20 years. And so I went to education classes. And in one class they said, they were up front talking, and it was a panel of people, and they said, what we want is for Hispanic teachers to teach Hispanic kids. We want black teachers to teach black kids, and we want white teachers to teach white kids. But the problem is, and at first I thought, did we see a problem with that? Do you guys see a problem with that? I'm just like, huh. Oh, it's because the students relate to the teacher better when they're in the same ethnicity. And these teachers were like taking notes. What, 20-year-old next to me, Utah teacher, how do I get that in my school? We really need this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, seriously? I went back later and I said, I have to give the benefit of the doubt. Were you serious? Like, it doesn't sound like segregation to you? Oh, no, don't think of it like segregation. But you know what? The problem we're having is that some of those teachers, we can't get a lot of black people or the Hispanic people to go to college or to graduate college or even to get their teacher's degree because the test is too hard. So we want to give them a different test, an easier one so that they could pass it. And I was like, oh, can you see where this is heading? Yeah. That's where that came from. Okay. So at least, how can you tell if they're telling the truth? When they say, I am pro-life, I support the unborn, or I support property rights. I was at a town hall where they were running for House Representative. Yep, House Representative. I'm in Southern Utah. And they were debating, and someone said, how do you feel about property rights? And I thought, that is the dumbest question ever. What do you think they're going to say? They both stood up there, oh, yes, we support property rights. Number one, property rights, blah, 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 blah. Be careful how you ask your questions. Don't ask a question that is a no-brainer. Don't ask a leading question where they know how you stand. I'll either ask it very vague or I'll lead it the other direction. For example, let's talk about an unborn. What are you going to do about my rights as a woman and my right for my own health care? If I need to get an abortion, what will you do to support that? Now, I clearly feel the other way. But I don't want them to know that because a lot of candidates will find out how you feel and then answer that way. I know this because it happened right in front of my eyes. He's my neighbor. And I told my this was right in the middle of 2020, and my son said, I always take them to town halls. By the way, you should be going to town halls. They do, since they were 14, have been going to town halls and are required to ask one question per candidate. And he said, how do you feel about the vaccine? That's pretty vague, right? He even had a tone of voice and an aura that is emotionless. And the guy said, how do you feel about it? I was like, oh, he fell for it. I don't like it. I would never get it, he said. You know what the guy said? How does he feel about the vaccine? Yeah, I'm against it. I would never. My friend called him on the phone a week later and said, how do you feel about it? Same question. How do you feel about it? She gave the opposite answer because she's like me, and he told her exactly what she wanted to hear. He's a good guy. He's LDS. Just because they're LDS does not mean they would make a great constitutional candidate, right? We all have our strengths, and some really good LDS people make great bishops and Relief Society presidents and mentors to the youth, but maybe not necessarily. That doesn't automatically qualify them to be a constitutional expert, someone who can protect my rights in an office. So, I mean, you could. They could be both. But it's not automatic. So how do you know if you're telling the truth? I tend to avoid their webpage and their flyers because they're going to tell us everything we want to know. And even if they're at a debate, if they're debating, I go. But I don't always love them because people ask questions like, how do you feel about property rights? And I'm thinking, man, there's so many better ways to ask that to find out what you want to know. Okay, so ask it in a way that they can't tell how you feel and with an emotion and facial expression that they don't know how you feel. Or ask it leading the other direction. For example, property rights. When I say property rights, everyone's like, yes, property rights, but Airbnb fits within my property rights. I have a home with a basement and I have room to have an Airbnb, but my neighborhood tells me, my city tells me I cannot. Do I have property rights? No, I have to ask permission from my city in order to exercise the rights on my property, right? So I feel like anybody telling us where and where we can or cannot have an Airbnb is an infringement on my property rights or yours. That's just my personal opinion. We don't all have to share it, but that's my opinion. So I wouldn't say, how do you feel about property rights or how do you feel about Airbnb? I might say, how do you feel about Airbnbs? That's pretty neutral, right? Or I might say, my neighbor has cars out front all the time for their Airbnb. What are you going to do as city councilman about that? Now, I don't care because I realize that if I'm going to buy a house 10 feet from the other house, I'm going to have to deal with their drama, right? If I didn't want to deal with their drama, I would go get 2 acres or 5 or 20. You make that decision, right? I live next to a farm and the neighborhood it's a really ritzy neighborhood next to this farm. They built their house against the farm, and now they're complaining to the city about the flies. I say, property rights? You knew that farm was there when you built right next door. Okay. Your rights, you have rights, and you should know them and stand up for them, but your rights don't infringe on other people's rights. If you feel like you're entitled to something that infringes on their money or their property or their own rights, that's where your rights end. And it's a hard thing because they build the houses so close together these days, you are up in their property. And you do know when they have 6 cars parked out front. But that is their property and they own it, right? Here's an example of how that could backfire you. 2 streets over, all the neighbors are complaining that this guy is working on cars. And he has them all parked on the street. And they don't want all those cars parked on the street while he's working on them. It doesn't look nice in the nice neighborhood. So they complained to the city, and the city wrote an ordinance that said, you can't have more than 1 car parked on the street. You know what this guy did? I'm sorry, but I love him for it. He ripped out his entire front yard and paved it into a parking lot. Moved all the cars up there. Now, I know some of you homeowners are like, ugh. But why couldn't those neighbors go to him and say, what can we do to help? there's a dirt lot next to my house. Would you like to use a space or two on that? I mean, you know, they're your neighbor, and now you have to live with them. I have one neighbor right across the street from me says, I want to move now. Well, okay. I'm way off tangent. But I think Americans have started to use government as a weapon. And it's so common that we look at it and don't think anything of it. Yeah, that dog is barking at the store and it's pissing me off. What do I do? I call the city council. No, we shouldn't use government as a weapon because if you use it as a weapon, so will they. Right? And if it sounds good to you now, will it sound good in 6 years when someone else has that same power? Right? All right. So where do you find good candidate information? Totally not those places, right? You could look at their flyers and their web page, but if you are, let's say you are a Republican and you're interviewing Republicans, they're all going to have the same thing because the Republican platform, which is the paragraph that says this is what we believe, they have to do that in order to have the R for Republican behind their name. They like have to. So that's why their flyers and their web pages and their Facebook pages and their Instagram, they all look the same. They look like the Republican page. So where do I look? I look at their voting record. You can ask the question, what if they don't have one? I'll address that in a minute. But if they do have one and they're running again, I look at their voting record. How did they vote on issues I'm passionate about? Now that's hard to watch all of them because if you're looking at the federal government, they have, like 80 bills a day. It's too much to watch. I've given up on the federal government. But I do watch this state, and they pass about 800 laws in the 3 months that they're in session. It's a little overwhelming. So I pick things I'm passionate about. You pick things you're passionate about. I like pro-life, pro-family, parental rights, and my husband owns a small business, so I look at how they're treating businesses and licensuring, and do they give us more rights, or are they easing up on us? That's what I look. And education. Not because my kids are in the system, but because what goes through the education system makes its way into the private sector. We see it all over. There are states where you can't homeschool, or you don't have as much rights as we do here in Utah. We're really blessed. There are some people that are writing laws that preemptively stop them from making laws to restrict us. So we're a little bit lucky there. So I look at their voting record on things that I'm interested in. Now, where in the heck do you find that? Or what if they don't have a voting record, like me? I was running for Utah, what was he, House Representative. House Representative in my district quit in the middle of the legislative session. And so we had an emergency election and took 2 weeks to get, I don't know, it was 1 week to get someone elected, and I ran. And this girl called up, she's vetting me. Vetting means, you know, figuring out what I stand. She goes, I usually look at voting records, but you don't have one. So I'm going to give you one. And then she asked me questions about bills that were either already passed or were up for debate and said, how would you vote on that? Isn't that a brilliant idea? I had to meet her in person on election day. I had so much respect for that. She was the only person that called and vetted me out of the 230 people that were voting for me that day. Not one of them knew anything about me, and they casted a vote. They did give us 2 minutes to get up and say, this is me, and this is what I would do, and blah, blah, blah. All eight candidates talked about their husbands and their families and how long they had lived in Utah. I know, people want to hear it. It's so sweet to hear how long they lived here and how much they love Dixie. But it tells me nothing about their politics or how they would vote on education or the city or the drag queen show that's going to be in St. George, right? Nothing about that. I got up and talked about politics because that's me. My husband says, you should tell them stories about your family just to make them feel good. The problem is I think we have uninformed voters. They show up, they pick the one that makes them feel real good, and they goes into office. You need to know how they're going to vote because they're passing, in the state of Utah, 800 bills every 3 months on you. That affects you and your business and your parents' business and your ability to get your license in the small business you want to start. Okay, voting record. They don't have one, give them one. Call me. I will help you make a list of questions to ask them. All right, where do you find good information on candidates? I'm going to talk about state and federal candidates in two different sections, okay? So these are the state, these are websites that you can find good information on state candidates. That means state House of Representatives, state senators, they're making laws for the state of Utah, right? Governor, auditor, those kinds of things. So libertas.org is a really good one. You just go to resources and click on legislator tracker, and it gives you all the Utah state senators and representatives, and it gives you a percentage. It tells you how they voted, yes or no, on certain bills, and at the very end gives you a percentage. Now, you have to be careful. I don't agree with everything Libertas puts out, right? They are very libertarian, which is very close to Republican, right? This is what they stand for, free market and reduced government in our business. So they only look at bills that have to do with this. And then they grade senators and House reps how they voted on these kinds of these bills and then grade them. So when you look at the grade, it really is only on these kinds of bills, right? And then Pro-Life Utah, that's kind of obvious. So they are all about protecting the lives of the unborn. They only grade legislators on those kinds of bills. I looked at it today, and senators reps have either a 100% voting record or a 0% voting record divided on party lines. But it's still important to look, because if you're voting for someone, you want to know how they feel and how they actually voted on that, right? Or you could go and look at the bill for someone who doesn't have a voting record, get the bill, and then call up Deborah Palmer. Hey, how would you vote on HB 274 that says, just read the first line of the bill, that says you can get an abortion after 50 weeks, blah, blah. You just read the first line. Let them give you their opinion, and you decide. What I love about the homeschooling community is we are taught to think for ourselves. Do not allow them to tell you how to think about these issues. Think about it. Discuss it with your parents, with your mentors. so that you can get an opinion, an educated opinion on these issues before you make a decision on how you feel. Because they are so good at selling them, whoever you talk to first will sell you on it. Even if you're older, you would look back and go, huh, right? Because they're really good at selling you on it. But that UN conference was a good example. Well, they relate to their teachers better, and if their teachers are from their neighborhoods, right? I mean, that makes sense. Anyways, this is for federal candidates. It's really hard because there's so many laws and bills, and I have never been able to get a hold of my state House rep and senators, but I still send them emails. The Freedom Index, and you just type in your legislator's name. Does anybody know their senator's name? We have two senators here in the state of Utah. Does anybody know any of their names? Just two.
Mike Lee.
Mike Lee in the back. Mike Lee. Good. Senator Lee. Mitt Romney. So we have Mitt Romney and Mike Lee. Those are our two senators for the state of Utah. We have more House reps. I don't know your guys is up here north, down south. I have Chris Stewart. So I looked at theirs, and I'll tell you. So anyways, the Freedom Index looks only at bills that talk about limited government, fiscal responsibility, national sovereignty, avoiding foreign entanglement. So, you know, look at things. They're not going to judge on pro-life. These organizations do not. So, and the Eagle Forum is a good one, too. So those are looking at federal candidates. I did a little research so that you could just see. These are Mitt Romney and Mike Lee are two Utah senators at the federal government level, right? They live in Washington, D.C. and Utah. And I looked at the Freedom Index. This is just a reminder of what they look at. And I looked at the Eagle Forum, and that's a reminder of what they look at. And their scorecard based on how they voted on issues regarding that. What are your thoughts? Mike Lee's pretty phenomenal. I don't agree with everything he does, but he's pretty phenomenal, and it's hard to beat that. I don't know if there's even one, maybe one more legislator on Capitol Hill that can get a better scorecard than that. He's a libertarian. What do you think of Mitt Romney? He's a great guy. And he was the state president of my neighbor, so I know he's a great guy. But is he an excellent politician? Maybe. He is. Yes, 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 because some people really like the way he votes. But does he vote the way you want? And maybe don't make the decision based on this. This is just a quick, I don't have a lot of experience. I'm going to look at 41% and say no. Maybe go look at that bill and decide, do I really like that bill? Do I agree with Eagle Forum? Think for yourselves, right? Read a bill. Interview representatives pro and con. Because the first person you talk to is going to convince you. So then, if they're pro, you find someone who's con and interview them and get their opinion and then make an educated decision on how you feel. Have discussions with your mentors and your parents about what you learned. Do it yourselves. Nothing more effective. Does their ideology lay within the proper role of government? If they say, and I saw a presidential candidate say, I'm going to declare war, I was like, you can't declare war as a president. The Constitution says Congress only can declare war. So clearly, he doesn't understand the Constitution. Well, at least that one part. Like, it doesn't mean he doesn't understand any of it. Okay. I wanted to show you how easy it was to read a bill, because some people go, read a bill? Ah, this is a bill right here. Okay, now disclaimer. Utah has a law that says legislators cannot write omnibus bills. An omnibus bill is when they throw in 100 different things in it. Right? Utah has a law that says you can only have one item in a bill. One. So the bills are really short. This is a super short one. I picked like a soup, but I've seen 6 pages bills, and that's really long for a Utah bill. Most of them are 1 to 3 pages, and they're spread out like this, right? Now the federal, they might say, we want $1 million for education and $2 million to clean the Lincoln Center, and we want road work all in one bill. And so if you vote no on it, then you're like the demon because you said no to education, but it's awful. So I don't read federal bills. But Utah bill is totally doable. In fact, read. This was a bill this last legislative session. By the way, if it's underlined, that means they're just rewording an already existing bill. So all they did is change these lines on a bill that already existed. I'm sorry, they didn't change. They added these lines to to an already existing bill that talks about, hey, if there's like a food problem, the stores have to take it off. If there's salmonella growing in their bread, they have to take it off the shelf. That's what the bill says, basically. And they added these lines. I'm going to give you 60 seconds to read it. How do you think? Yes or no? Do you like the bill? It seems like it would be good, right? Like they want to contact me if someone got sick off of something I bought at Lynn's. They want to contact me and let me know, hey, don't eat those eggs. That seems like it's safe. What I don't like is that the stores are keeping track of what I buy. That makes me nervous. And that they have contact information for me and that they can then contact me. That makes me nervous. Now, like, let me just find out or publish it in the newspaper or something. But, you know, some people say, but I want to know, right? So you could go either way. I'm not going to make an opinion on this. I just want you to see how easy it is to read a Utah bill. It's totally doable. They always have a title at the top, like 5 words. That tells you what's in it. And they always have a summary right here. Look at that. A lot of times I just read that, and I know what the bill is. But, heck, that's an easy bill to read, right? Find out for yourself. What are some example questions? That's in your worksheet. Or that's in your notebooks. Those are 5 example questions that you could ask a candidate when you're in front of them and you're wondering, hey, are they going to protect my constitutional rights? I don't know. Right? If we don't understand. If I told you that there was this flower that could save your mom who's dying of cancer and you need to go into Zion National Park and get it and this is what it looks like. It's got a... And then I died. If you don't know what it is, it's going to save her life. How in the world can you save her life? How in the world can you protect this country and the freedoms we were meant to have if you don't even know what the document says? You must understand your rights, which you know now, right? Right? 3, 4, 5, right? Okay. But also you need to elect representatives because we do not have a democracy. We have a republic, where you pick representatives to go and do the work for you. You need to pick people who understand the Constitution and will protect our rights that God gave us. And you can't do that if you don't even know what they are yourself. So I am so pleased you guys are here instead of dancing because that would have been so fun. I am pleased. So what is your favorite question on here? Someone give me an example. Leave it open-ended. Just let them fill in the blanks. If they say I had a legislator, a senator write me this. It is my job, my solemn responsibility to protect you and your family. It was about guns. And I said, I wrote this because it made me mad. How dare you stand in between me and my husband? That is his job, to protect me and my family. Your job is to get out of the way so we can. Right? Be careful. That is an excellent question to just leave. They might say, what do you mean by that? I want you to tell me what you mean. What do you think it is? Good question. Good. How did the founders structure the American system so that socialism would be unconstitutional? Does anybody know the answer to that question? Yes.
And then beyond that, in the Constitution, there are several checks and balances in regards to commerce, interstate trade, fear of the war, which I thought the reason for future reference, and they raise, but those are actually
good. Hey, this is a test. What article of the 7 articles in the Constitution talks about states? That starts with an S. States. States. In that article, it says every state is guaranteed a Republican form of government. It's against the Constitution for any state to have anything other than a Republican form of government. And the 10th Amendment says any of the 26 powers not listed in the government belong to the states and to the people. There. Government can't be in control like in a socialist society. You are prepared to go vote. I hope you understand that you're not done learning and that experience will help you roll along. Thank you for coming.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this record. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.